Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
A missing person is a person who has vanished and is unconfirmed as alive or dead, as their location and fate are unknown.
Welcome back to Down the Rabbit Holes podcast. I'm Melissa.
And I'm Amy. We're doing great, healing up.
Yeah, living the dream over here.
Maybe almost at 100%?
Almost, getting there.
Good. This year has been something else, I'll tell you.
2020 is going to be a swear word here shortly.
Yes, and actually you bring up a really good point. I just want to give a little disclaimer. I'm going to quote something in my story today, and I debated whether or not to do that. Melissa and I actually try not to use inappropriate language, and as you know, we're really thoughtful about the way we say things, when we say them, and we like to kind of follow up with an explanation. But being that I think it's a really powerful quote from this potential victim, or this victim, because this person's missing, I thought it was actually really powerful to add a quote from them, and there is some inappropriate language. So if you do have anyone around you that might be offended, or you yourself is offended by inappropriate language, I do just want to give you a forewarning. I'm not going to overuse it. I'm just going to lay the quote out there. And
Well, now I'm intrigued.
Oh, you are? Well, good. I'm glad. This case came to us from a listener of ours. They actually submitted a list to us, and we love when you do that. We at least half the time may have heard of a case, but it gives us a reason to do the deep dive because we know that there's a want out there for it. We know that someone is wondering about this missing person. So it gives us that reason to go deep dive. Now, this case was, you know, I researched it just like I would any other case. But what I found was that I would take off on a tangent of reading articles and I would totally forget I'm looking things over for the podcast. So I would literally not be taking notes, getting so engulfed in everything that was going on. And then I'd be like, oh, well, wait a minute. I wasn't even thinking about how I'm putting this story together because I'm just so invested in the story.
I love when that happens. I hate it because then I like you, am like, oh, no, now I have to go back and figure out how we're going to piece this together. But I love it because it means I get to tell a good story.
Right. In this case, I had heard of this case. It is an international case, so already up my alley. Sometimes I sit there and I wonder, like, why certain cases resonate with me more than it does others, or vice versa, or why is this case so interesting to other people and I won't touch it? And the therapist in me says, like, Amy, what's coming up for you? And I think in this case, it is because our missing person's name is Amy Fitzpatrick.
Okay.
So I share a name with her, and we were not the same age, but we were young adults, teenagers in this period of time. She also, there are significant names in the story that relate to family. For example, her mother is Audrey. That's my grandmother's name. So I think that there were some deep reasons why I was like, ooh, like that feels too close to me. And maybe you guys have experienced that too. Nevertheless, I talked myself into it. I said, Amy, whatever's coming up for you, like just walk on through it. And I did. I'm glad I did. So I'm going to bring you the case of Amy Fitzpatrick. Amy was born on February 7th of 1992. There aren't any significant details of her early life, which we run into sometimes. We can safely, I guess, suspect that her home life, or at least her parents, did not have a good marriage because they inevitably did get divorced. I'm not sure exactly when they got divorced, but they did, and Amy and her brother Dean ended up primarily with their mother. So their mother is Audrey, and their father is Christopher. And I should say that they're, like I already mentioned, this is an international case. So the story takes place in Ireland, or at least it starts to take place in Ireland. The family is from the area of Dublin, not right in Dublin, but somewhere outside of Dublin. Audrey eventually meets someone, and his name is Dave, and I apologize if I'm mispronouncing his name. I'm going to do the best I can, but otherwise we'll be calling him Dave, but his full name is Dave Mann, and I don't know whose idea it was, but they both inevitably decided that they wanted to move to Spain.
Now, this is Amy's mother and her new boyfriend. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay.
And I don't know who felt this way more, but someone felt as if this is going to be a great new start. So why don't we go? And if you're kind of asking yourself, if you're not from this area, why did they pick Spain? My understanding is that a lot of British and Irish citizens moved to this particular region that Audrey and her family did in Spain because this is just a densely populated place with British and Irish citizens. It's a really good place to start over. If you live pretty much anywhere, you have particular regions in your city or your neighborhood where...
I think you said it right.
Where you might say have more predominant ethnicities or cultures. For example, New Britain, Connecticut. They have an area called Little Poland. That is a densely populated Polish area. So this is how...
I would even say that happens with Americans within America. Like, for example, I live just outside of Raleigh. There's a town, I guess, north of me, whatever. I'm not Indiana Jones over here. Near me, called Cary, and it's C-A-R-Y, and they call it the centralized area for relocated Yankees, because two-thirds of the people that you meet that live in Cary are from New York, Boston, up north.
Oh, that's very interesting.
So I think the same thing kind of happens even within the United States.
Yes, exactly. So this is just one of those things. This is how I wrap my head around it.
Okay.
So they set off to move to Spain in 2004. Christopher, he stays in Ireland. Audrey takes Dean, which is Amy's brother, and travels with Dave to Spain. And again, I excuse pronunciation. They move to a place called Mies Costa, and this is just where they plan on starting their new life. At this time, Amy, I believe, is 12 years old. She actually does not want to go, and I get it. She's lived in or around Dublin her whole life. This is what she knows. Most kids, when they move, it's scary. I mean, when an adult moves, it's like adventurous, but am I going to meet friends? Am I going to be liked? My extended family and friends are here, and it's not like I'm moving a few towns over. It's a whole other country. So they begin their new life. This period of time is not, I guess what you say, factual, but it's basically widely believed that it was a fairly miserable time in Amy's life. She's described as a shy girl, but friendly and personable. But she didn't seem to get along with Dave. She hardly seemed to get along with her mother. I wasn't able to find any details about her relationship with her brother, so that's really hard to say. But what I read was just so heartbreaking and so disturbing. She was basically one of these kids that was house hopping from friend to friend to friend as like a means to escape from how awful it might have been at home. She would spend days and weeks on end with friends. She didn't want to go home. There was one particular time that she must have been stuck in a position where her choices were to go home or to sleep in the streets. So basically she ended up sleeping in a field as opposed to going home.
Which at 12 has to be terrifying. So it makes me wonder how bad things were at home.
Yes. She had expressed to friends that, or at least one friend, that Dave made her skin crawl. He's kind of described as short-tempered and cold and mean and not really the stepdad type. And I really started to delve into, like, the psychology of all of this and what it must have been like. And if this ties into kind of that abuser mentality, and what I mean by that is, this man comes along and he meets a woman and she has two teenagers, which you have to really be willing to take on a woman and their and her children as a whole, right? You're not just dating a woman and her kids are going to stay on the sideline. Like, it's the whole package deal, right?
Right, 100%.
So this guy supposedly just does this and that's totally fine. But then I think about, like, whose idea really was it to move to Spain? We don't know. We probably never will know. And who knows? They might not even really remember who first brought it up at this point. But isn't it kind of an abuser's mentality to pull people away from their safety, isolate them, to have control over them, etc.?
Yes. And I would also say the skin crawl to me doesn't say physical abuse.
Unfortunately, no. There are no reports that I could find that specifically state that there was any closure, but I do have to wonder about that myself.
It reminds me of, like, the Alyssa Turney story where she's like, dad's a pervert.
You know what? Yes, absolutely. And imagine having to live with that. It's very disturbing. So take that with a grain of salt. It may mean nothing, but the reality of it is she only has Amy, that is, her newly found friends to lean on for support. In 2005, if all of this information made you feel like you didn't know what to do with it anyway, a friend's mother, from what I understand, she actually took the time to write the Irish embassy and state to the Irish embassy that they were concerned for Amy Fitzpatrick. She didn't seem safe. She seemed very scared. They may have been quoted as nearly saying, like, she may be harmed in the future. She may end up in a position of foul play or something to that degree.
This is horrifying.
Apparently, there was nothing done about it. There's no record of anything being done about it, and life went on as normal. The year before Amy disappeared, she actually was very sporadic in her attendance at school. She would show up. She wouldn't show up. She would leave early, come in late, things of that nature. And by the time she nearly disappeared, she wasn't even enrolled at school at that point.
And her mom obviously didn't care.
According to some interviews and according to things that I've read, it's kind of blaming it on Amy's a free spirit kind of thing. Like, you can't make this child do anything.
You have one of those,
yes,
right?
Yes, I do have one of those.
And if he decided to not go to school, would that be a problem for you?
Yes. I will say, yes, you cannot control another person, right? You can't.
But they're your child.
Right.
You have
but
to control them.
What are some of the things that I would do? Just off the cuff. I'm not even critically thinking about this, okay? I'd enlist the grandparents. I'd enlist the teacher. Okay, pretend that my family's not close. I'd enlist teachers. I'd find a mentor, try and get them on sports teams. you know what? You don't want to play sports? Let's do art club. Let's do theater, whatever. I need to connect you with someone that you can connect with. If it's not me, because this is not about me, this is about your well-being, and this is not about my ego, it's about saving you, I'm going to get everyone on board to try and save you.
Agreed.
So, yeah, that is disturbing to me. Do I understand that you can't control someone? Absolutely. The minute you think you can control someone is the minute, I don't know, like all hope is lost. But there are things that you can do to encourage someone to make better choices, to increase their social supports. Sure. I feel okay. Like you disagree, maybe.
No, I agree. I also feel like, yes, you can't control someone. But as a parent, your job is to ensure your child is safe, is doing what's required of them. You know what I mean? Like, that's your sole purpose. And I understand that the things are difficult, and it's never just cut and dry. It's not easy because, you know, I've seen families that can't control, you know, a teenager. Sure. And I understand that. But I just wish her mom would have fought harder.
Yes, and let's just assume that at home she was arguing with her and trying to make her go to school and do all the right things, okay? I guess the fact that perhaps the school never came forward and said, hey, we had this great communication with mom. We had this plan in place of trying.
Right.
You know, it didn't seem like she was reaching out to anyone. And I guess I could go into a tangent about that, but I won't here. I'll just leave it at that.
Okay.
So we know she's pretty miserable. She's staying at friends' homes. She doesn't want to be home. Eventually, a diary or journal, not that I think that it was hidden by any means, but it was recovered, and it shed some light into what Amy was really feeling, aside from what she was sharing with her friends. And I'm going to read to you part of what was written here, and this is the part where I do want to give a warning that there is some inappropriate language. It states, I smell of dog shit, and I haven't had a shower in 2 years, and I moved into my new house today, and it's quite small, and it's not been painted. I'm hoping to paint my cardboard box soon. What, two sentences, and it's the saddest thing you've ever heard?
Ever heard in my life.
Yes. Now, I want to say, artists, poets, writers, they use a lot of imagery and a lot of adjectives to describe feelings that might not be a literal event that's happening.
Right, because likely she did take a shower in 2 years, and she may not be in a cardboard box, but that's how she felt.
Yes. And what it screams to me is that no one is caring enough to make sure that she's cared for. No one is giving her a space of her own. She has no space. And it certainly, no matter how I try to reframe this, doesn't scream I'm happy. Now, further into delving into Amy's life, I guess a lot of people did have their concerns. I mean, it would be concerning if one of my children had a friend come over and stay here for long periods of time, right? I would want them to be welcome in my home, and I would want to give someone a meal, and I would want to make sure they felt safe. But you know that's not normal, okay? They also right. felt she looked disheveled. She looked malnourished. Her clothes were tattered and worn and perhaps even outgrown. So a lot of people...
And a preteen time is a time when kids are the meanest.
Right. And all this girl wants to do is go back to Ireland.
My heart already hurts for her.
So Amy is supposed to actually go back to Ireland for a visit. And she's excited and her bags are packed prematurely. She just can't wait. And I'm sure in some way, shape, or form, she's thinking to herself, when I get to Ireland, I'm going to find a way to stay.
I'm sure she is. Like, this is her ticket to right. freedom.
Unfortunately, her brother may or may not have gotten into trouble before this trip, which prevented them from going. We're not actually really sure if that's true or if it's not, but we know that a trip was planned, and we know that it didn't happen because Dean also struggled with his own behaviors and getting into trouble and things of that nature. So this leads up to the disappearance. And before I kind of talk about this in the smallest amount of detail that there is, there's so much that happens leading up to the disappearance. There's so much that happens after. But the disappearance is probably could be summed up in one paragraph. But I will tell you.
What?
Yes. But I will tell you that Amy had two cell phones. She had her cell phone that she received when she moved to Spain at some point and that she was able to use, okay? Then she also had her Irish cell phone. And I don't think this is unusual when I think about it. When she had her Irish cell phone, I'm sure she had her whole life in there. She has all her contacts. I don't even know about social media, but at a bare minimum, she has all her phone numbers, right? This is how she's going to contact dad or whatever. And if it was me back then, if I had the phone and my contacts there, why would I even bother switching it to my new phone? It's just an extra step that I don't need. So she has two phones.
Fair.
She's known as being attached to her phones. Whenever you saw Amy, you saw her phones. January 1st of 2008, Amy is at her friend Ashley's house. And this isn't unusual. Ashley is her best friend. Ashley knows everything that there is to know about Amy, that she is scared of Dave, doesn't like being home. She's one of the people that Amy actually spends a lot of time with at her home. On this particular night, Ashley is babysitting her little brother. Not unusual.
Yeah, absolutely. And how old are they? 15 or so at this point?
Yes. Amy is 15.
So they're not old enough to be out doing their own thing.
I don't think so, but I'll get there.
Okay.
The time frame is limited. At around 9:30 or between 9:30 and 10:10 p.m., Amy wants desperately to stay. She wants to stay overnight. For whatever reason, Ashley's mother says no. And I get it. Amy stays over a lot. Ashley's mother's kind of like, why don't you just go home and say Happy New Year to your mom? Just have the night at home. And as a parent myself, if I'm constantly caring for an additional child, aside from the ones that I'm legally and morally responsible to,
right,
I don't necessarily always want another one, right?
Right.
So she needs her break, whatever it is. Amy says, okay, I'm going to go home. So she leaves, and it's said that she had her phones with her the whole night. Ashley specifically remembers at some point making a phone call to her mother from her phone. She used both of them. She had both of them with her, but she leaves. Now, it's a short walk between Ashley's house and Amy's house. When I thought of short walk, though, I thought, I don't know, the length of a football field.
Okay.
And even that's not short, but in terms of homes, that's what kind of came to mind.
Down the street.
Yes. But when I kind of looked into this and I looked at the space, it appears as though the usual route that Amy took was like off on, maybe you would call it a trail.
Oh, no.
And the trail led directly to her house. But at some point, it's impossible for me to believe that it would have been well lit or lit at all. And to me, that's not a short walk. I don't know what it means. I just thought something completely different. And yeah, at face value, when I looked at it, I was like, okay, this is a little scary. Things could happen. Absolutely.
Yeah, but I would guess she's less scared of that and more scared of home.
You know what? And if this is the same girl, and it is, that slept in a field to avoid going home, what's a walk down a trail? And one that she frequented.
Right.
So that is actually the last time that Amy was seen, was when she left Ashley's home. It is well thought that Amy never made it home. However, when the investigation began, Amy's phones were found at the home, which
what?
Ashley indicated, and most people know that Amy wouldn't be anywhere without her phones. So if what Ashley sees is correct, it can be concluded that Amy did, in fact, make it home that night.
What is her mother's story?
Well, when the morning comes, or at least the next day, so this would be January 2nd, Ashley is attempting to get into contact with...
No, this would be January 1st, right?
Nope, she left on January 1st.
I thought it was New Year's Eve. Sorry.
You know, I did actually say New Year's Eve in terms of Ashley's mom going out to celebrate or something, but it was January 1st that she was last seen. So okay. She had spent New Year's Day there.
Okay.
So I apologize about that.
No problem.
So the next day, Ashley kind of knows that something's not okay because... Amy always answers. Amy's always by her phone, right? Here's where things get really dicey and confusing, because in interviews that Audrey and Dave have, they are not at all what I've read in articles, so it's really hard to know what's accurate and what's not. So I'll kind of do my best to sort through it. So it's reported in many news articles that Audrey and Dave did not, in fact, report Amy missing until January 3rd, which is an additional day later. They state...
Okay, so I know that sounds really bad, but if the girl sleeps in fields, it's not like her parent, her mom and her mom's boyfriend or whatever he is at this point are keeping tabs on her.
Correct. Well, I can agree to an extent, okay? So... They, just so you know, in an interview that I saw, actually said, no, it was the very next day that we made the call that she was missing and followed up with a report, whatever that means. And I did think that initially, but I always think about what I would do if it was my child and... let's pretend I had a rough relationship with one, both of my children or whatever, and they were known to leave, stay out overnight. My indication would probably be to, all right, like they don't want to talk to me. They don't want to check in with me. But what I can do is I can call a parent or I can text a parent. Forget text. This is 2008. Maybe it's not as prevalent. I don't know. But I would be at least checking in with a parent and say, you know what, you don't even have to let me talk to John or Jane, whatever. Please just let me know that they're safe. So, I mean, that's something that I would do, okay?
Right.
The investigation does not come up with a lot. They find her journal. They have accounts from people that are very concerned about Amy. They actually had one... maybe witness that saw her at a bar, which would have been shortly after she left Ashley's home. My first thought was like, how could you even think this was like a relevant theory? First of all, she does not look, and this was me actually being, and I'm owning it, like ignorant about not lumping Europe into one country. But my thought was like, don't all European countries have the 18-year-old drinking laws? So she doesn't look 18 to me. And even if she was, is she going to a bar alone? I don't know. Allegedly, from what I found out, Spain, or maybe just some areas, I don't know if it's all of Spain, are just very lax with you coming into a bar. So could it have been her potentially speaking with an older man? And this older man had something to do with her disappearance? I don't know. I don't know. But I guess the moral of that story is that nothing came of it. And as of this day, there has been no other sightings of Amy. There have been really no follow-ups, no nothing in regards to this case. A couple of key things to know is that Amy's family did hire some representation to help them with her disappearance. In late 2008, which is maybe roughly 8 months after Amy disappeared, this particular lawyer's home was burglarized. None of his valuables were taken, but Amy's phone was taken from his, I guess, box of things and some things.
Wait, law enforcement didn't have her phone?
I would think that, but apparently he had...
Maybe they did everything they could get. I don't know.
Perhaps.
Anyway, keep going.
Perhaps. It says that her phone was stolen, documents on a laptop or whatever. For the most part, the attorney was like, I'm not really worried about it. I have backups, but not for the phone. But that was it. It was just Amy's stuff that was taken. Another thing came up about a year later in which Audrey stated that she had a calls and texts in regards to a ransom. They offered a certain amount of money, significant sum of money in exchange for Amy. When police went to investigate, they found that the source of these phone numbers was from a burner phone, so nothing came from that whatsoever. And at this point, Amy's mother believes that there's some credible information that someone from the Irish gang or something from that could have been the guy that was seen at the bar with Amy and may have something to do with her disappearance. And this last one is probably the most devastating and probably the one that's going to make you literally, your heart is going to drop to the floor. In 2013, Dean passed away.
That's Amy's brother?
This is Amy's brother. And he was stabbed by Dave.
Oh my goodness.
Originally reported as Dean ran into the knife that Dave was holding.
Oh, obviously.
And what preceded this was actually an argument over something.
Him killing Amy too?
I mean, that is a thought, but it was something minor. Something minor that they were doing. And he was sentenced to some time in prison. He's not in there for life. But to top off this crap cake that these two people have built, Audrey ended up marrying Dave while he's been in prison. She says,
I'm sorry, what?
I have not forgotten what's happened, but I've forgiven him. And that is where the story ends. On that disgusting, horrible note in which a whole family is now destroyed.
Okay, so we work really hard to not paint people in a negative light, right? Tell me that one of the theories is that this Dave guy killed Amy for whatever reason, and her mother allowed it or covered it up or whatever it might be.
I mean, let me support what you said about trying to not paint people in particular light, which is why you heard Melissa and I have just some banter back and forth about alternate possibilities as to why that she might not have been a neglectful parent, right? We tried to look at it from an angle that people normally wouldn't look at it as, but it was hard. To answer your second question, yes, that is one of the theories, that Dave killed Amy. Unfortunately, we don't know where a body is, and how much Audrey knows is questionable, or how much she might have been involved is questionable, okay? Another theory is that she was at the bar and she took off or was abducted by the man at the bar. Another theory is that she got really unlucky on her walk home and was abducted in a separate incident. A theory is always you could have walked away, sure.
Which is honestly what I hope for in this story. I hope she left her life.
Seriously. And I would have totally said, I get why you did that. And after that, I mean, I've heard pops of things come up in regards to what could have happened. I can't deny that most people think that Audrey and or Dave had something to do with this. Not many people are behind Audrey in that this random Irish gangster came all the way to Spain to take care of a 15-year-old. or that he abducted her. Yeah, I don't know what a 15-year-old could have been involved in.
Is died by suicide a theory?
It could be a theory, but I haven't seen too much on it. She was so excited to go to Ireland, and granted that didn't happen, and that could have been something that drove her there. But
wait, that could have been the trigger.
That could have been the trigger, absolutely. I do think it's viable. On the other hand, where is she? How could she have hidden herself so well?
Well, it doesn't sound like a whole lot of investigation happened. They found her phone in her house, which her friend said she had when she went missing. And that means we don't know? I mean, that's pretty damning evidence. So she obviously made it home, right? Like, that's what happened.
It really looks like it.
She met foul play in her house, or she left on her own accord. So nothing happened to her on her walk home.
Right. And I trust Ashley. I'll tell you that I know when my friends have their phones or not.
Well, me too. And at that age, when you know, like, what her life is like.
Yes.
No, she made it home. So either she left on her own or disappeared, or something happened to her in her house.
So then you have to look at what was the particular motive. So, yes, there was...
He was sexually assaulting her, and she either was going to say something or fought back or whatever it is.
That is what first did come to mind for me. Not necessarily that she would have spoken, but perhaps that she fought back this time or said no, and this guy is an angry guy. I mean, we know that he stabbed Dean. We know what he's capable of. We know the level of anger that he has, okay?
It reminds me so much of Alyssa Turney, and it makes my blood boil with how angry I am for this little girl.
Yes, and I can't imagine what it was like to be her father in Ireland, you know, probably finding out about all of this after the fact. And now he has no children. He knows his ex-wife, who he spent trusted time with, is with his son's killer? What? To this day, she's with him. How can you...
And you know what? If he would have been found not guilty and they would have said it was an accident, and you know, it would have been, and I would have believed it was an accident, like, okay, maybe they worked through that and got past that. He's in jail for killing your child.
And I understand.
At some point, your children need to come first.
And I understand the kind of catharsis that some people need. They need, like, that forgiveness piece, okay, to move on with their life. And I won't get into all that.
Oh, agreed.
But some people work really hard on forgiveness for themselves, not for the other person, but for themselves to be able to move on. Okay, you've forgiven him, but then who said forgiveness entailed marriage?
I really dislike you for bringing this case because...
Thank you.
Like you said, we walk a fine line and we really try to make sure we portray everyone and give everyone the most possible, I don't even know
benefit
the word,
of the
credit
doubt.
That we can. Benefit of the doubt that we can, yes. You are making it so difficult to give this woman any credit or benefit of the doubt at all.
Yes, because... However you present this case to me about a child that appears malnourished, I could say, okay, well, eating disorder, or maybe they just had a growth spurt. I can dismiss all of this with perhaps some sort of explanation, but then I'm like, wait a minute, I have to lump this all into one pile? And then this is a woman that didn't reach out to schools or to her own father and say, I'm really having a problem with Amy. Like, what do you suggest? Or to put her in therapy or any of the things, any of the things. If you're religious, take her to church. None of those things. So I can't come up with anything other than this child was severely neglected. And
murdered.
And that's where I come to. So my theory is, in fact, that Amy did make it home. When she got home, something happened with Dave. I think...
It could be over the next 2 days. Oh, actually, no, because her friend was trying to reach her, so it couldn't be.
So, something happens when she gets home. He gets angry. He kills her. Is Audrey involved? I don't think so. I don't think she cares enough to get involved in any of that if she doesn't have to. But she probably inevitably knew about it at some point very shortly after, because she...
I think you're giving her too much credit.
Maybe I am. But whenever they made the call to the police, she already had to know to say that she likely didn't return home. And then allowed this man to stay in their lives and allowed for this man to kill her other child. That's absolutely what I think has happened. And I think, as I've said before, the simplest solution is often probably the most realistic and logical one.
I would love for someone to make a case about something else.
If you think she walked away, or if you think that something with the guy in the bar, I mean, I still can't wrap my head around. She's like, I'm leaving my friend's house and going to the bar. What? At 15? I don't know. 15-year-olds do crazy things. I'm not ignorant. I know that, but it just sounds... Was she a frequenter at the bar? Did they say they've seen her before? I don't know. Make a case for it, though.
A lot of questions.
Anybody. But, you know, unless you want to hear me turn into, like, the Tasmanian devil and just get really angry about this whole thing, I'm going to leave it at,
I'm already there.
I think Dave and Audrey are part of this, and they know what happened to Amy.
I agree.
All right, guys. Well, I think that's where I'm going to leave it.
Yeah, I agree. There's not really a whole lot else to talk about without getting angry, like you said.
Exactly. So, you guys, email us, meet up with us on social media, and let us know what you think happened. I know that this is a popular case overseas, and I know it's been requested. So you guys come forward and let us know what some trends are in your thought processes from across the pond.
Yes, please share and keep your case requests coming.
Yes, thank you so much, guys. And we will see you next week with an all-new case.
Bye.
For more information about this case and other cases we've covered, visit our website at www.downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
Follow us and interact with us on social media. On Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, we are Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast. You can also reach out to us via email at theories@downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast is a 2002 production written, hosted, and developed by Amy Lamar and Melissa Benitez. Music by Kevin Wyman. Audio production by Amy Lamar.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. WATER to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.